So in this way we see that the Buddha is an altogether, we may say, distinct, indeed unique type of human being, not to be classified and not to be categorized. And this is the moral, as it were, of the story which we recounted the other day of the Buddha's encounter shortly after his enlightenment with Upaka, the naked ascetic. Upaka, as you may remember, tried to categorize the Buddha as a deva, a yaka, a gandhapa, even human being, but the Buddha repudiated all that and said that inasmuch as he had transcended all those conditionings, all those psychological conditionings on account of which he might have been called a deva or yaka or gandhapa or human being, he was simply a Buddha, one free from all those conditionings. And the same idea we find expressed in the first verse of the Buddha Vagga of the Dhammapada, where the Buddha says, whose conquest is not to be undone, whom not even a bit of those conquered passions follows, that enlightened one whose sphere is endless, by what path will you trace him, that pathless one? So the Buddha is a pathless one. The Buddha doesn't go on any particular path. There's nothing by which he can be identified, nothing by which he can be tracked or classified or categorized in any way. Often we find that people want to classify you, they want to categorize you. Now I remember when I was in India, one of the first questions that I was always asked anywhere by anyone was, what is your caste? Especially in South India, this is the first thing that they want to know about you. Are you a Brahmin? Are you a Kshatriya? Are you a Shudra? Are you anything else? What is your caste? And if they don't know that, if they can't classify you or categorize you according to class, they don't know what to do with you. Or according to caste, they don't know what to do with you. They don't know how to deal with you, don't know how to treat you, whether they can take water from your hand or not take it, whether they can get to know you or not, or whether you might marry their daughter or not. All these things are very important. And just the same in this country, though here we're not so direct. In India, I've often been stopped in the road by someone just passing by and he says, what's your caste? Without any sort of preamble. But in this country, people are much more indirect in their approach. But they're trying to worm out of you the same sort of information. They want to know, really, what sort of job you've got. They'd have to work out your income, maybe, from that, where you live, where you were born, where you were educated. In this way, by taking these various readings, as it were, these sociological readings, they can gradually narrow down the field, and then they've got you just there. You are this. You are that. And then they feel that you're nicely, neatly pigeonholed. But you can't do that with a Buddha. You can't even really do it with an ordinary human being. Not really. Though you can try and even succeed to a great extent. But with a Buddha, you really can't do it. A Buddha is one whom you can't pin down. You can't say he's this. You can't say he was that. But people like to try and classify and categorize even the Buddha, just as Upaka did. He wanted to know, he wanted to pin the Buddha down, whether he was a deva or yaka or gandhava or human being. And when he found he couldn't pin the Buddha down, the Buddha refused to be pinned down, he repudiated all those categories, then Upaka just didn't know what to do. And according to the account, he just shook his head and said, well, it may be so, and he went away. That was his reaction, because he couldn't classify, couldn't categorize, couldn't pin down the Buddha. So that's what is meant when we say, in the words of the Dhammapada, that the Buddha cannot be tracked. He doesn't leave any trace. He's the pathless one. Just like the bird going through the sky. The bird doesn't leave any track in the sky. And if you try to track a bird by following its path in the sky and looking for signs that it has left in the sky, then you would have your work cut out, as they say. So it's just the same with the Buddha. You can't track him, you can't trace him, because he belongs to a different dimension, the transcendental dimension, dimension of eternity. And the same idea is expressed in the Sutta Nipata, where the Buddha says, there is no measuring of man one to the goal, whereby they'd say, his measure so. That's not for him. When all conditions are removed, all ways of telling are removed, when all psychological conditionings are removed in a person, then you've no way of accounting for that person. And this is what the Buddha is like. And the same sort of idea is expressed more abstractly in 4 out of the list of 14 inexpressibles, as they are called. We won't go into all of these now, but these 4 positions are whether the Buddha existed or would exist after death or not, or both or neither. And the Buddha was very often asked this. For some reason or other, some of the ancient Indians had a real thing about this. And they often used to come to the Buddha and say, please tell us, when you die, will you go on living or not? Or both or neither. So the Buddha always used to repudiate all these 4. And he would say, it is inappropriate, it is inapplicable to say of a Buddha that after death he will continue to exist. It's also inappropriate to say that after death he will cease to exist. It's inappropriate to say he will continue to exist and cease to exist. And it is inappropriate to say he will neither continue to exist nor cease to exist. All these are quite inapplicable and quite inappropriate, because, he went on to say, even during his lifetime, even when he sits here in a physical body, the Tathagata of the Buddha is beyond all your classifications, beyond all your categories. You can't say anything about him. The Buddha is the person about whom you can't say anything, because he doesn't have anything. He isn't anything, in a sense. And this is why in the Sutta Nipata again there's an epithet of the enlightened beings, Akinshana, which is usually translated as man of naught, one who has nothing, because he is nothing. And therefore you can't say anything about him, which is very tantalizing for the human mind. We find, again, that many of the Buddha's disciples gained enlightenment by following his teaching, gained individual emancipation, but they still seem to have felt that there was something very mysterious about the Buddha himself. Something they couldn't quite understand, something they couldn't quite fathom, something beyond them, even though they were themselves emancipated, even enlightened. And there's a story about Sariputra in this connection, which is typical. Sariputra was once in the presence of the Buddha, and he said to the Buddha, out of his excess of faith and devotion, he said, Lord, I think you are the greatest of all the enlightened ones who have ever existed, or will exist, or who exist now. I think you're the greatest of them all. So the Buddha was neither pleased nor displeased by that. He didn't say, well, what a marvellous disciple you are, and how wonderfully well you understand me. He said, he just asked a question. He said, Sariputra, have you known all the Buddhas of the past? So Sariputra said, no, Lord. And then he said, have you known all the Buddhas of the future? No, Lord. Do you know all the Buddhas that now are? No, Lord. Then he said, do you even know me? And Sariputra said, no, Lord. And then the Buddha said, that being the case, that being the position, how is it that your words are so bold and so grand? So this shows that even the enlightened disciple, the wisest of the disciples, like Sariputra, didn't fully understand, didn't succeed in fathoming the Buddha. And therefore we find that after the death of the Buddha, this feeling or this attitude on the part of the disciples that the Buddha was unfathomable, that even though they were enlightened, presumably just as he was enlightened, they couldn't really understand him at all, couldn't fathom him at all, this found expression in a list of 10 powers and 18 special attributes which they built up and which they attributed to him, just to mark him off, as it were, from all the other just merely emancipated and enlightened disciples.